In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcasts and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the third series of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And I'm mea culpa. There's been a long gap between episode 1 and episode 2, and it's all down to me. I'm very sorry, listeners, for those of you that have been waiting patiently on episode 2. I've been away. We took a much needed break at the end, and we've been off jetting to Arizona. So a fantastic time, Helen.
Yeah, well, I think the listeners should realise that the we that you're talking about is you and Brian. As I say, I had a weekend in salt coats myself.
You went to Nevada.
No, I actually went to Elgin, Liz, but carry on about your Arizona, much more exotic.
It was fantastic. We were in Phoenix to start with, where it was temperatures up in the high 80s, 90s, which was just wonderful. And then we met up with them. It's great in this job, Helen. You make friends that you keep for years and years and years. So a couple of that from Laguna Niguel outside Los Angeles that we meet up with, and they come across here regularly, and they took us up to the Grand Canyon.
Oh, fantastic, Liz. Well done.
It was absolutely brilliant. But everything comes at a price, Helen, because we're back home now in a wet and windy Scotland. But my husband, Brian, has got the most dreadful jet lag.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he'll not take kindly to that.
No, it's musical beds in our house. It really is. It's absolutely unbelievable that we're now sort of like 10 days back and he still can't sleep and he's still getting up in the middle of the night. And of course, he blames it on me, and you'll never know what he blames me for, Helen.
No, I don't believe it's snoring, Liz.
It is. Now, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sure that Helen won't mind me saying that Helen is,
I can win prizes. Yes,
she's actually Guinness Book of Records level. I'll just say that when we were guiding in Oban, and in the days of Rick Steves' tours going to Glenburnie, which some of our listeners will recognise, a beautiful guest house in Oban, the guides used to stay in room 1, which is on the ground floor.
Yes.
And Graham of Glenburnie used to say that as he went round at night to put the lights out, he could literally hear the whole hotel shaking.
Oh, was it me?
It was you. You are unbelievable. When we go to Edmunds to the reunion, Helen and I share a room and there's not much sleep.
Well, Liz, there's good things called earbuds, but actually I think that snoring is a very good thing, because it lets your friends know, and Graham and Glenburnie would know, well, there's somebody just relaxed and sleeping, having a good night's sleep.
Yeah, well.
So, and still alive, and still alive.
As we say in Scotland, aye, right. You know, I mean, you see, there's earplugs, Helen. There's earplugs. I literally sleep with a pair of headphones, the pillow, the duvet, and we have, in Edmunds, you have the trains going through all night long, blaring their horn. That's nothing. Tell them what your grandchildren say, if they're in any doubt about what I say.
Yes. Well, actually, we go camping, as you know, in the summertime, and they just say, oh, Grandma, you were snoring again. But they're used to it, so they're quite comfortable with it.
Yes, I wouldn't swap my roomie for anything, but, you know, it is a challenge. But anyway, it's kettle and pot calling each other black,
yes,
because apparently I am disturbing my husband.
I think that's hilarious. I think that's hilarious.
I'm now in your league as well. But change daisy, Helen, talking about Arizona. I mean, how exotic Arizona. Not the holidays of the past.
Yes, no, we used to, as holidays, until people in Scotland discovered that the sunshine could actually have warmth in it, we used to be very content going to our local beaches on holiday. And the East Nuke of Fife is fantastic for beaches. And we used to take a big expedition from Stirling through to the East Nuke. And that today is a car drive of about a mile and a half. But we would pack it up, pack up the car, and my two sisters and I and my parents would go drive all the way, taking a whole day to get there to St Andrews.
Yeah, and we were thinking, you know, what to do this week. And of course, this week it is the 30th of November, and that is the patron saint's day, St Andrew's Day. And so we've done St Andrew himself before, we've talked about him, but we thought it might be fitting to just have a wee trip down to the east coast, to the East Nuke of Fife, and to talk about St Andrew's, because it's a beautiful destination.
It's a beautiful destination, Liz, and of course I tailed a little bit of a porky pie saying we used to go to St Andrews on holiday, because that was for posh folk. We went just down the coast a little bit to Crail, but went to St Andrews to the beach. And St Andrews is still quite a posh destination, but beautiful.
It is. It's always, you know, you'd think if you look at the geography of St Andrews, it's right out on, we talk about this East Nuke, and Nuke, N-E-U-K, is a little cosy corner, and the East Nuke is anything but, because it's got the full winds coming off the North Sea.
Yeah, the East Coast winds, yes.
Yeah. So it's not surprising that the name St Andrews came from St Andrew himself, the disciple firsthand of Christ, and it was, the legend has it, that it was a shipwreck in these stormy waters that brought the relics of St Andrew to a little settlement called Kilrymont.
Yes, it was quite interesting because this, as I say, the legend is that the monk looking after the relics in Patros in Greece had a vision and was told to take the relics from there and take them to the ends of the earth. And as you say, Liz, the legend says that the shipwreck, the ends of the earth, turned out to be Kilrymont, which eventually changed its name to St Andrews.
Yep, and there was already a religious settlement, the Kildees, the Friends of God, Kildee. They mustn't have been too happy when, with the relics appearing there was a monastery established, and eventually it would go on to be the centre of religion in Scotland.
Yes, and the building work for these big events didn't really take place until about the 12th century, wasn't it? With, first of all, St Rule's Church, which was the other name for St Regulus, the name of the monk who is said to have brought the relics to St Andrews, St Rule's Church, which eventually became too small. And then very soon after, was hot on its heels, they started building this magnificent cathedral, St Andrew's Cathedral.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's the legend. But again, good old Scottish phrasing, aye, right. Others would dispute that and say not at all. It was much more practical reasons, because the Scots fighting with the English as usual, that they were frightened that the Archbishop of St Andrews would come under the authority of the Archbishop of York. And so it was said that it was the relics were brought up from Hexham in England for practical reasons, because this was the time, the medieval period, the cult of saints and relics. And so with the relics of St Andrews, the pilgrimage to St Andrews took on the sort of same status as the pilgrimage, the Camino de Santiago, or even Jerusalem itself, Rome itself. Yep. So it became a major site on the pilgrimage route.
Yes, because these were the places where pilgrims could actually sort of revere the relics of the saints, the actual saints who'd walked with Jesus, who were the apostles, who were the disciples. So these four sites, well, the three sites in particular, St Peter's, Santiago de Compostela and St Andrews, were the big main places that pilgrims wanted to be at.
Yeah, and you see that when you go to look at the cathedral today. I mean, the cathedral was sort of doomed from the start, lots of problems in building it, but it was on a par with the top cathedrals in Europe. It was said that when it was consecrated, King Robert the Bruce, who many listeners will have heard of, he had to ride down the aisle on his horse. It was so long to walk. It was such a magnificent cathedral.
Well, I always have a wee smile when I'm standing in the nave. It's now just a ruin for our listeners. It is just a ruin. So imagination is required. Although the storyboards around the cathedral are very helpful, but I always think that two other people associated with the cathedral, just a little bit later on in the 1500s, were James V and Mary of Guise, the parents of Mary, Queen of Scots. And I just think of poor Mary of Guise. She gets out of the carriage at the, well, what we now call the roadside, at the west gate of the cathedral. And she gets out there and she just looks down the length, 143 sort of metres, and looks down there and says, "What? In these shoes, I've got to walk down there."
This is true. Plenty of time to change her mind. I bet she wishes she'd done on many occasions. She made it and she got down there. If you visit today, what's lovely about St Andrews is that it's not just about the religion. There's so much more to it. And right side by side with the religious area of the monastery and the cathedral, you've got the town. And in its day, it was a medieval borough, a medieval settlement, thriving port and trading port and market. You know, at one time there would be hundreds of ships that came in and filled the harbour for the market in the town. And so you've got this division between the religious and the spiritual side and the secular, the practical side. Sitting side by side, you've still got this medieval borough with its three major streets, a grid system, which many of our American listeners will be used to.
Yes, and of course, these three streets that are there, if you think of the head of an arrow, the three streets are the three streets of the head of the arrow. The two sort of pointy bits coming out the side of the head of the arrow are North Street and South Street. And the arrow itself going up to the sharp point is the middle street, which is Market Street. And all these streets lead to the main point, the cathedral. So if you're in St Andrews, just think of a head of an arrow as you're walking down the streets and you'll find these three streets very easy. It's a lovely place to walk round, Liz.
It is, and of course in the days when there were literally hundreds of pilgrims were arriving, it was a one-way system because they would go up one street up to worship at the relics and then back down the other way. And in the middle, Market Street, you know, the practical side of it, but everywhere there would have been stalls selling little trinkets, little lead phials with holy water in it, or the little badges that the pilgrims wore. So, you know, souvenirs like we would pick up now.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it still is a real thriving town. And I just love St Andrews. And when you walk around, you see a lot of the old houses. And if you look at them closely, and as I said, the cathedral is now a ruin. If you look at these old houses closely, the stone that is building them, that they've used for a building, is actually the stone from the cathedral. It became a stone quarry eventually.
Yeah, and what I love about the stone in that area is that the cement that holds all the little granules of the sedimentary rock together is very prone to acid rain now, so it becomes all pitted. And yes. Oh, it's just so, I don't know, it's so lovely when you look at these. And of course, all of the influences from the trading ports, you know, so you've got the Scottish vernacular architect, you know, the stairs up to the first floor, the gable ends with their cross-stepped gables, you know, beautiful village, but of course, dominated nowadays by the university.
Yes, and just on this architectural point, Liz, of course, we mustn't forget the beautiful red pantiles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That came, the pantiles which are used as roofing materials, they came across as ballast from North Europe after, you know, as part of the trade. And the Scots, being Scots, said, "Oh, we're not getting rid of this. They'll do for the roofs." So all round the East Nuke and in St Andrews, you find these lovely red roofs, the red pantiles on the roofs.
Yeah, and St Andrews, the town itself, very much town and gown, because in between these the houses, the old part of St Andrews, medieval part, you'll find the Department of Film Studies, the Department of International Relations, because the university is integrated into the town. It was the first to be established in Scotland. It was established in 1413, at a time when there was just two universities, Oxford and Cambridge. Now, the Scots never got on particularly well with the English at this period.
Oh, and so really?
They were not going down to Oxford and Cambridge. Cambridge. So the poor Scottish students, and these days we're talking about at the age of 13, 14, they would go off to the continent, to the great universities of the continent like Leiden. And so it was, you know, for a long time they wanted Scotland to have its own university. And so not surprising, it was here, because it was the centre of religion in Scotland, that the university was given authority by the Pope in Rome to establish the first university in 1413. And there wasn't a lot to study in those days.
No, and there were very few students who went, but it was later on in 1400s, the 1450s, the Scots students were kind of going over to Paris to study. And, you know, Bishop Kennedy, who was, you know, around at that 1450, decided we've got to do something to swell the numbers. I don't think anything changes. Universities are still trying to swell numbers, aren't they? Find ways of bringing people over.
International students,
So he built the St. Sylvester's College. Now, Liz, how do you pronounce St. Sylvester's?
I do it the same as you, St. Sylvester. You know, some people say St. Salvator, but no, I say St. Sylvester's. I think the university says St. Sylvester's.
Yes, I've always noticed as that. But he built that, and Town and Gown, Liz, that you mentioned, very, very obvious there, because the main door of the chapel, St. Sylvester's Chapel, the main door, the ornate door, is on the street, not in the quadrangle of the college. So they're saying, come on in, town, we are part of you and you are part of us.
Exactly. It's all going back to this religion as well, and trying to bring religion to the people and bring them in, not to have this division as there was before. And so, you know, that this is exactly that, bringing people in. And so, you know, in those days, there weren't all your biologies and your literature and your, it was about very limited subjects. It was about classics, Greek and Latin, but most foremost was it was the centre for divinity.
And
it's not surprising that this was where the Reformation of Scotland started.
Yes, so if we jump into the 1500s, we've got people, you've mentioned already, people travelling abroad to North Europe, just really a hop and a skip across the water from St. Andrews. And they would travel over and they heard what was going on over there. You know, they heard Martin Luther, they heard all these things, the sort of discontent and unrest and you know, need for reform within the church. And they brought this thinking back to St. Andrews. And one of the first people who brought it back was a young man called Patrick Hamilton. And he sadly displeased the church in St. Andrews and ended up in the bottle dungeon and then being burned at the stake outside the door of St. Sylvester's College, where he had been a young lecturer.
Yeah, the first of a series of what were called the religious martyrs. And they were heretics in the eyes of the church. And so, you know, they had to be put down in the worst possible way. I mean, you talk about Patrick Hamilton, the bishop or archbishop, I can't remember what he was at the time, beaten. He spoke about the stench of Mr. Patrick Hamilton. You know, it was reeking. It was like smoke. These ideas, this reform was like the stench of smoke penetrating through the population, and he had to be put down in the worst possible way.
I know, and the, you know, and he was first of a number, and one of the other ones that came along later was a man called George Wishart. And George Wishart, he was preaching around Scotland, and again, you know, got up the nose of the cardinal at St. Andrews and ended up being burned at the stake. But a young man who was his, you know, companion in his travels, George Wishart's travels around Scotland, was a young man called John Knox, whom we probably, our listeners probably know more of John Knox than they do of Patrick Hamilton or George Wishart.
Yep, John Knox would go on to be associated forevermore with the Reformation in Scotland. But the four that died before him, there's a martyr's monument, which is another of the landmarks of St. Andrews, which commemorates these four. The last one was an old man, and he was the last to be burned at the stake just shortly before things changed in St. Andrews. So, you know, you've got this religious reform everywhere you look. The Bishop's Castle, which was the seat of the bishop and then archbishops, you know, it was for status as much as defence against the enemies of the church of that time.
Yeah, I find it very odd to think of the bishop's palace, which, you know, we hear in other places, is really a fortified castle designed for defence, etc. It's just amazing.
Yep, another interesting visit with its bottle dungeon.
Bottle dungeon, yes.
Bottle dungeon, which, you know, you can see the marks on the stones, you know, it's engraved into the history of this little town. But nowadays dominated by the university, and as it's such an ancient university, lots of traditions associated with the university.
Yes, and you know more about some of these, Liz, because of your daughter Jenny. She was a student there. But things like Raisin Monday, which sounds very odd, but this goes right back to when the first year students, these poor wee freshers arriving at St Andrews for the first time, they were kind of paired up, buddied up with a third or fourth year student who then had to look after them. And then after they'd found their feet, they gave the second, their buddy a gift. The first year gave a gift, and it was a pound of raisins at the time. But nowadays, I think, Liz, now translated more into a bottle of wine or something more substantial.
Yeah, any excuse for an army. But you know, you still see that the students wear their traditional red gowns, and there's different styles to wearing them, off one shoulder, off the other, off both shoulders, according to which year you're in. Very rarely, I mean, most of the students buy these red gowns in the first year when they get there, and then they never use them at all. The only time that you really see them on a Sunday after they have the service in St Salvator's College is a traditional pier walk, where they walk in their red gowns out along the pier of St Andrews. But other than that, it's really only graduation is the next time it comes out. A bit of a waste of money.
Yes, and I think some of our listeners, if they're in St Andrews around graduation time or the beginning of the year, freshers time, when they're showing new students round, doing a little tour, the students who are doing the guiding will be wearing the red gowns. So it's a bit like us in our shortbread tartan outfits, Liz.
That to
stand out from the crowd, they wear their red gowns now.
Yeah, but you talked about the raisins. I mean, this was the start of really the buddying system that we're familiar with in universities now.
Yes.
Because still to this day, the St Andrews tradition is academic families. So when a student goes up in first year, they get somebody, usually from a club or society that they join, or maybe in the same hall that they're staying in. They ask them if they'll be their academic mother or father. And then from that, you get academic grannies and aunts and uncles and all the rest. Any excuse for a good old pub crawl. And
that's right. Yeah, where else to meet but in the pub and help you through your university career? And talking about traditions, Liz, we talked about the Patrick Hamilton being burned at the stake, and his initials are written in cobbles outside the door of St Salvator's, PH. And one of the big traditions is do not stand on the initials of Patrick Hamilton, because the idea is that if you just have a good time, you've done all this pub crawling, etc., during the term, and it comes to exam time, you suddenly realise that, oh, I haven't done much studying. Oh, never mind. I'll put a red rose on the initials of Patrick Hamilton and he'll see me through.
Or use it as an excuse. I just walked on it by mistake. I just tipped my toe over Patrick Hamilton. Well, I wonder if two of its most famous students in current times would have done that. And that, of course, is Prince William and Catherine.
Yes,
the Prince
that's
and the Princess
right.
of Wales. Yep, they were students.
And they met during their first year at St Andrews, just as many other people meet their final partner, their loved one, during their university careers. And they've been together ever since.
I
thought it was lovely that, you know, when they were married, the university opened up and did a big marquee, a big celebration for all those people who had met their partners while students at university, and they had a big kind of wedding, you know, breakfast for them. And I thought that was really lovely.
Lovely, yeah. And it could all have been so different, Helen, because as you say, my daughter was there. She overlapped by 1 year. She was there in her first year when they were in their fourth year. And I think St Andrews was chosen deliberately because they had an agreement with the press that that William would not be bothered while he was there. And security was much more simple because it's just a small town, and very much he moved within his own group. Jenny said that you would see him. In fact, she was standing outside a pub phoning her gran one night, and she says to her gran, "You'll never guess who's standing next to me." And her gran says, "Who?" And she goes, "Prince William." "Oh, go and speak to him, go and speak to him." You did not speak to him. There was security was there. The crime was never so low. You know, all the student pranks, you know, you'd have the students who'd been on one of these pub crawls coming home on a Saturday night and thought it would be great fun to go into a garden and pinch the garden gnomes. So they'd be walking along the streets of St Andrews with a big garden gnome under their arm, and suddenly this black car van would draw up with the windows blacked out. And the window would go down on this, and they'd go, "I'm just putting it back. I'm just on my way to put it back." So security was never tighter.
And I think it was nice. I think it was a great sort of feather in Scotland's cap when you that they did allow William to have a university life that was as normal as he could have it.
Definitely.
You know, he was, you go to Tesco's to get his shopping and that kind of thing. I think it was, that was nice. Yeah. I don't know if it would have happened in many other places.
But let's face it, St Andrews, really, the university is not like many other places. I mean, they talk about the Pink Pashmina Brigade. There's not a big centre of population. You have Dundee, which is the closest city. It has its own university, two of them. And so, you know, St Andrews doesn't have a local population to draw on. So it's very popular with students, particularly from England. And it's one of the universities with the highest proportion of international students. In fact, it's got a joint international degree programme with St William and Mary's in Williamsburg in the States. So it has a lot of American students and a lot of students from all over the world.
Yes, and I think education is one of the big things in St Andrews. Religion, education, and then the other thing, the new kid on the block in St Andrews, Liz, is golf.
Golf, and hitting the press at the moment because Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake have put forward proposals to open a sports bar. And it's under planning permission at the moment, but it's causing a right stooshy. Because they proposed that this you know, sports bar will be in the old town cinema. And you know the town cinema well, Harry. It's a beautiful building right at the heart of the university.
Yes.
It's a 1930s art deco. And you know, so there's huge petition. There's over nearly 10,000 signatures at the moment to block the plan. So it's watch this space whether Tiger and Justin will get their plans. So golf is the mecca today. But maybe I'm thinking, Helen, that we've talked so much that maybe we should leave golf and make a special episode on golf alone, because there's plenty
in Scotland. Yes, yep, there's a lot of things. Yes, we could certainly do that. I'm just thinking that, you know, golf is so iconic, but that cinema, I think it still operates as a cinema,
does it not?
Yes. So which is very unusual nowadays for these small, beautiful Art Deco cinemas still to survive cinemas.
One of the few independent cinemas in Scotland. So that's why there's such outcry. I mean, I think, you know, I was thinking about it and I was thinking, you know, fantastic to have Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake associated with it because they love the town. But at the same time, a sports bar, I mean, it's more in place in Arizona. It's not really in place in St Andrews.
Or even in Scotland, really. It's certainly in maybe the cities, but there's maybe only one or two. There isn't the population in St Andrews to do that. And the hotels might say, well, we quite like telling people that they can come here for a drink.
Yeah, I mean, that was my initial reaction when I heard that, you know, there was a lot of people speaking out against it. I thought, they'll be protecting their own businesses because undoubtedly the American golfers would flock there. But I do think probably on reflection, it is out of keeping with St Andrews because it's still a medieval town. And of course,
you see, the American golfers would flock there, but they're not coming to St Andrews for that sort of thing. They can do that at home. They're coming to St Andrews for the medieval town, for the walk around the streets, for the beaches. We haven't even mentioned the beaches, Liz.
Absolutely, the West Sands.
Yes, I love the West Sands. They're fantastic, stretch for miles, and of course, where we can all reenact Chariots of Fire.
Yeah. Running slow-mo through the waves.
Yeah, and that's the nearest we'll get to sport or sports bar.
That's true. But also, you know, when you go down to the West Sands, the sand yachting, you know, you see them out.
Yes.
You know, all these breezes or gales blowing in off the North Sea, perfect for sand yachting. And more recently, sand art.
Oh, yes. Oh, there was a beautiful one of Seve at the time of the 150th Open.
Yeah, yeah.
A beautiful one of Seve Ballesteros on the sand.
Yeah, you know, people going out now, there's a company there that put these beautiful installations into the hard sand of the West Sand. So, yep, something else to draw you to St Andrews. So, you know, we're talking about John Knox, but one of the most famous visitors for holidays to St Andrews was Mary, Queen of Scots. She loved it. When she came back from France after her husband had died and she came back as Queen of Scotland, her and her four Marys, her handmaidens, would go and play hoosie. They'd play keeping house in St Andrews. They would date. They had little apartments and they would cook and they would clean and they would go out shopping. They'd go out incognito round about the market in St Andrews. And she absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I think it is a town that you fall in love with. I mean, you. I don't know. Well, I've been to St Andrews, Liz. You've been to St Andrews. We are famous.
Yep, absolutely. But, and just wandering in and out. It's like Edinburgh. You wander in and out of the closes.
Yes, and I think people get a little bit nervous about wandering in. I say, just go in and out, look down, and if you can see a way through, just walk down all these narrow streets, because it is like Edinburgh. It is like these little narrow venules and wynds that are there. And of course, talking about wynds, the most famous one is the one that they have to put the street sign very high up, but wind, which some people might mispronounce, the W-Y-N-D, as wind.
Yeah, the Americans love that one. That's part of the university. But, you know, another one that's famous, if you wander into the quadrangle, the quads, it's a bit like, what's his name, Morse in Oxford. It's all the quads, the old-fashioned quads. But the quad of St Mary's College, which is the School of Divinity, in there, there's two famous trees. One is an oak tree, a beautiful oak that has won prizes. It's for Trees of Britain. But the other one is said to have been planted by Mary, Queen of Scots herself. And it's a thorn tree, a hawthorn tree. And it was said that she planted it when she got news while she was in St Andrews. And this is back to the 1500s. She got news that her favourite uncle, the Duke of Guise, the brother of Marie de Guise, had died. And you know, it's still going strong. It's an amazing little tree.
But it's quite interesting, Liz, because over lockdown, that tree, it for the past, you know, several years pre-lockdown, it, you know, COVID, it was looking quite sorry for itself, but it had a couple of little, you know, side shoots had come off of it. But during lockdown, the very old decrepit tree did come down. And, you know, they took it down and they've nurtured the side shoots, the ones that have come from it. And they are looking so healthy now. They really have, you know, really blossomed and got the fruit on it this year. It's looking fantastic. But the other, the oak tree is a holm oak, H-O-L-M, which is not an oak tree as we know it. And it was planted in the 1700s. It's amazing that these trees are still going strong.
Yeah, and just two of the things you find when you go on a wander, you find another thing that you might stumble into is the Byer Theatre, another institution of St Andrews. It was a theatre that was established in a cow byre by a farmer. And nowadays it has, what do you call these, touring companies go in and put on performances there. So a lot of people go to St Andrews for the theatre.
Yes, and it sort of found itself under threat a few years back, but was kind of brought back from the brink because it is such an iconic theatre. In the old days, when it was literally a byre, a cowshed, the actors, if they exited stage left, they had to go out into the street, run round a block and come in if they were entering stage right. You know?
That is dedication to your craft.
Yes, that's right. So you see these costumed people running down the street to get their cue to come in again.
It's a good job it's not the Rocky Horror Show.
No, that's right.
That was before that time.
That's right. And of course, talking about things that are, you know, pilgrimages, we've got religion, we've got education, we've got golf. But ice cream, Liz.
Oh, I knew you'd come to that one, Helen.
Ice cream. You cannot go to St Andrews without my two scoops of vanilla in a tub, please.
Vanilla? Oh, what a waste, Helen.
I know.
Have more imagination, woman.
I'm very boring for my ice cream, but I do like vanilla. But of course, in Janetta's and other ice cream places, you get many, many different flavours.
Yeah, I know. You're into your coconut. Coconut's my favourite. And then your elderflower,
tablets,
sorbet,
Scotch tablets,
everything. Iron brew.
Iron Brew, that's right.
Yep, every day different varieties of ice cream, yes. Ginettas. But as well as Ginettas, it's definitely sugar overload because we've also got Fisher and Donaldson's.
Oh, yes. Oh, what a cake shop. What a bakery, Fisher and Donaldson. Oh, you could just, the art gallery that is their window of all their wonderful sort of offerings and products. Oh, my goodness me.
And it tastes even better than it looks.
Oh, it does. It does. Really does. And fudge donuts.
Yep. To die for, literally.
Oh, what a lunch. 2 scoops of vanilla in a tub, please, and a fudge donut. Oh, what a lunch.
Well, I think on that note, that's probably a high point to end it with, people drooling if they've ever been to St Andrews and they remember the fudge donuts.
That's right, yes.
So good to get back into it. It won't be so long before the next one. We've got others and so many coming out of this. You know, every time that we do a topic, we think, oh, well, golf, Mary Queen of Scots.
That's right. We've got so much. Everything, yes. Oh, the Covenanters, that would be a tricky one.
Yep.
But we'll do it.
Yep, we didn't even touch on it today. So no. Have you got a word of the week, Helen?
Well, we were talking about the stone quarries that the cathedral and the castle became, and that was after the great cry went out at the Reformation to ding doon the wa's, dig down the walls, get rid of all these iconic or sort of idolatrous statues, ding doon the wa's.
Knock down the walls. Yep. Famous cry from the pulpit of John Knox. Yes. Well, mine's much simpler, taking it full circle right back to the beginning. The reason why this one is slightly delayed in coming out, this episode, is because I was having a good old-fashioned skive, S-K-I-V-E. I was skiving, which means I was work shy. I was off somewhere else when I should have been working. So back to old clothes and porridge and back into harness. So not long before the next episode.
Okay, and Liz, nice to speak to you again.
And you, Helen. Good blather. Okay, right. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Bye.
And there we have it, the end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the loo from me.
And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.